An interview with Don P. Davis at 3187 Lama Avenue, Long Beach, California. The date is May 26, 1982, and the interviewer is Ann Andrews.
We stopped on our earlier conversation. You were talking about your brother Ed and the start of the war. He was at Lockheed.
Oh, yes, I remember. I went in the service and he wanted to go.
Yeah.
And he had a, by that time he got about seven assembly tanks that he was in charge of. And of course, he kept bugging them and they finally told him that no way, you know, that he was going to go. And I said to him, that could be a four-star general to have his, he's responsible for as many people as he does.
Yeah.
So neither one of them went in the service. And, I said, I'd get back, and I ran the sparrows that we had for a while, and then I left him with the frosty trousers.
What did you do with him besides
that? I was public relations.
Uh-huh.
Contacting city councils, planning commissions, boards of supervisors.
In regards to the billboard?
Uh-huh. The city beautiful was always trying to put us out of business. They thought we were ruining the world and everything else. They loved the newspapers and they loved the radio and they loved the television, but they didn't like the outdoor. And of course, the outdoor was the most inexpensive of the whole bunch, I understand. But they figured it was enough for them more and more. That we'd better get into the act.
So that should have given you more of a taste of politics.
Well, that's been a terrific contact. And of course, we. That fact in Cassie, we handled, in the public relations department, we handled all the political advertising. And what we did, you know, when, if we have, you know, congressional race or any kind of race, we'd offer equal amounts to both sides. Because this is the one way that we could editorialize, I mean, if we didn't. Now, the newspapers, they offer to both sides and beat them over their head, whichever. One they happen to come out for. But we always thought that we'd be we'd be editorializing without giving a chance to advertise anything. And as far as we used out there for council races in Long Beach, and this is in the district that we have, this is Houston and Los Angeles, Santa Ana. But in the larger towns and cities, because the average person doesn't know how much a billboard costs. And if you run at the office and don't have very much money, they're the cheapest thing to use if you can get them.
Mm-hmm.
But the average person should look at a little classified ad, know that you can pay $1.65, or that he thinks one of those billboards must cost $3,000 a week, you know, or something like that. And it reacts sometimes. So they're definite, and then the other guys said, well, they're spending all that money, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But that was the contact that we got, and then, of course, we attended the conventions, and that was hard work.
The political conventions?
Well, I could believe the California cities, and we'd get tangled up in the other ones once in a while if they had one close, because we'd have a lot of friends there by that time. And it was really interesting.
Well, you told me last time that your first political campaign was the campaign to try to get Warren Barker
to
Congress.
Yes.
In 1938.
Well,
who was involved in
this? Well, this was just a bunch of kids that were in the politics for the first time. There was Emmett Sullivan, Wayne Rowe, and a whole bunch of us that had grown up together. And we loved the coach. So we spent all our time getting all our friends to register Democrats.
Yeah.
So, because they were just cross file. So, they were all upset about that. And I
don't. Then who were the other people?
The other were the big wheels, the old party bigwigs. You know, they don't.
So, who would some of those people be?
Do you
remember?
Sure, Captain Lane and DeMeyer and.
Wow.
The newspaper, the whole bunch, you know. They didn't have a candidate, and they thought the other guy was undoable. And so they went ahead. And then the last day before filing was over, when it was too late to register, practically. It was too late to register, yes. They came in with the mayor, Longbridge. And
then, remember?
I got a block on that particular guy. Because I think he lasted, I'm not even sure he got sworn in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were without representation for 2 years. So, our first reaction was, well, the whole of the world could do nothing on them. So they said, well, you put a sticker on them and see how they did it to us. You know, we aren't good twice. And so that was, after that's a little bit hard for the world. Well, then it got tangled up in the with the election in 40.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first president of the Young Republican in one of these things. And it was, that was kind of exciting.
Was the Young Republican formed just at that time for the presidential election in
40? Now, they didn't come along, but I think that's the first time we got a chapter. You know, we got, they sort of dead spots in between the 2 years. And in 46, there weren't any Republicans, if you remember.
Yeah.
That was the year Landon ran.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, well, of course, the whole deal, as far as the working was concerned, was sort of a grassroots thing. He didn't have any politicians back in him either. He already won, probably. But, I think that, you know, the other guy would be, especially, the members of both parties resent any. Sometimes it looks like they're going to endanger the species. I think they would get together in the back room. They're after them.
Who was involved in the Milwaukee campaign here in London? Who
were
some of the young Republicans?
They were after young. I think I got elected because I was the oldest. I was 30. That's Sullivan, and let's see, Sullivan, he was later city councilman and harbor commissioner. And he's done. We've got a few of us left around, and of course the last bat went to Roy Pinto there, and then the work came along. And getting out except I was voting officer in 44. Well, we turned out a real good thing. One of the things that happened on the MS when they wanted all the trips to vote, you know, was that they changed all the elections. And of course, California never went back to it. See, California used to have the primary in August and then general election in November. So that means you don't have to spend $80 million or something like that to try to keep going or keep the interest up and everything. Well, they moved it to June, said that they'd have a chance for the troops to go, where the troops could, you know, we could vote a lot faster than they could here, because as soon as we got this stuff, we held the election and sent the stuff back, kind of thing, even though they had to go to 48 states at that time. But as it turned out, it was a very unnecessary thing. And then they tried several times to change it, and I don't know why they don't, because it's just a great expense to everybody. And you hear up the campaign, and that's a good chance to fight among themselves. And,
I think that
it
is the impact of television now. You don't need it that
far in advance.
You
didn't need it before. I mean, this is like having a primary one year and wait to see if everybody is still alive 6 months later. You know?
Yeah.
But I remember when this was the last year, I think, that there was cross-filing. And Charlie Porter, who was an old friend of ours, he's in the school system in Compton, and he was the assemblyman down there. so he got elected. He was the only one in Southern California that got elected in the one both parties, because it had become that they were going to change it, you know, and it was taking effect, but not that year. And so he was the only one, and then there was one, some of them went up north, and there were no state senators or anything else up north. So, a month or so after the election, I saw Tommy, and I said, hey, you must be having a good time. He said, what do you mean having a good time? He said, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. I said, well, he was a physiology expert anyway, and a real nice guy. But you can see he'd better like me. I think he always got elected in the primaries. He's very fast as I could remember. And he said, so now, everybody, you know, this is the time they're looking for speakers from Sacramento. Can't be political. Well, I'm not any non-political assembly in it. So he says, they're just killing me day and night and coffee classes and everything else. But he loved it too. And we left him. He was a perfect guy. But I'm not sure that doing away with that was such a good system, because what they were hollering about. And it has changed things a little bit. But their contention was that, you know, and California had a pretty definite record of voting for the man, never mind who was balconying and all that kind of stuff. And so they, because you got elected in the primary, they went to hold him to the Democrats, if they were a Democrat, or the Republicans, and it was the Republicans. So that was the primary thing about it. That's why everybody was elderly. Closing about him, but real unhappy about this. Couldn't cut his water off and do all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure that was an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just turned out. Because we didn't have all the mess with gerrymandering that I don't remember that we did, you know, that we had now, and try to eliminate the other party completely. Or as they did this year, the Democrats, when they cut it up, and they were, somebody didn't have an example up in the San Bernardino Riverside area. And I think there were three Democrats up there that they didn't like, and they put them all in the district of the fourth one, and so they finally found the tubes.
Did you ever have any desire to run for elected office yourself?
No, and I think it's very true that people that have worked with him, I mean, they know too much about it, that they know, you know, it is a miserable job, really. It takes a much of your time. And that's fun running, I think.
So what happened as far as your activity politically in
Long Beach then? Well, then in 50, let's see, when I got back down here, I got home, and then I tangled up in the local council campaign. I always had been interested in that, I think. And Burton Church was a very good friend of mine. And we used to have some pretty hot and heavy deals there. And of course, they kept it on a strictly non-partisan basis, and it sort of represented the town was pretty much Republican then, you know, and nobody had a difference. The Democrats didn't care if there were nine Republicans on there. They thought it was all right. And in those days, we had the study in 1921, when they went down to the charter system. We had nine councilmen. Big difference was that. Yeah, we had nine councilmen elected for 3 years, and they all elected at the same time. And they had something in that charter that they sneaked through and got out the other day, and nobody knew about it but me and the city manager and the city attorney. I couldn't do anything about it. They had a clause in there that the citizens could recall the city manager.
Yeah.
So that's scaring Beaver to death, I guess. I don't know. We, at the last election, we rescinded that. And and they were the only city that had it. They were just obsolete or something like that. But anyway, they started the city manager system, and they'd had one for a year and a half, and the citizens hadn't had a city manager before, but they didn't like the way this one was running it, and apparently the council wouldn't fire him. So they recalled the first city manager we ever had in London. Mm-hmm. But not several times there was one young year when they got all nine of them running it at once. That's the 12 years. Well, you've already got into the system here, you know, where you went city, I think. Mm-hmm. And I thought that used to work out pretty well because I've seen it happen in other cities because we'd get involved in these elements all over Southern California. And they'd get in this weird stuff, like what we're into now, you know. And then we could have a five-man city council. And three of them take over.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lived in the other two districts, you're lucky if you got your trash picked up, everything up. I mean, it just gets to be a battle. I mean, that's the fact that one of the worst things is that you get a one-issue campaign, which, you know, we've gotten several of others here now. And they don't care if the guy just got out of jail or what, as long as he's for that one issue.
Do you think that the
longest
politics is more special interest versus special interest rather than political?
I wouldn't say special interest. I say it's not as district interest.
Okay.
I mean, the district, I feel the way we've got it set up, the way public district doesn't care if the rest of the city falls off in the ocean, as long as if they can ever get that airport, which he keeps telling them he's going to do, plowed and be turned over to us and have to put houses on it, and everybody's going to be happy, you know.
Yeah.
And, the way they vote out there now, I could get Tuttle elected 10 years after he was dead. You know, because that's all they look at, right down here.
Yeah.
And, so that's where I feel that they lose the big picture.
Do you feel
it
really, city politics is nonpartisan? I mean, it's supposed to be nonpartisan, but do you think party politics does...
Well, they've been trying to get into it once in a while, but it hasn't gotten out to where it's that kind of a setup. But Tuttle switched twice, so I don't know. He's trying to keep up with what, but he's running against Anderson, you know.
Yeah.
You know. I see a lot of complaint in the paper last night about they weren't giving him any ink. But on the thing, Ridley's a good example on the deal out there. Now, Russ has probably been the best company we've ever had in town, that I can remember. And he's got his principles, and he votes the way he feels like, and if he knows that the vote in that way is going to get him to the election, well, that's for hell of the people. If they don't want it, then he is one of the ones that is definitely into that city. John's another one, and they were two that had the most trouble, because they weren't going out and going to tear up the city just for the third district and the ninth district. And that's the thing that you get into. And you carry the same way out here. Because he had two businesses in this district, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the service station goes up, and there's nothing but Eddie's liquor store left. And he just pulled out and punched his bed and says, they shouldn't be spending all that money down in Long Beach. So I don't know what he should be bringing it out here and doing it. They're dividing it up every month, I guess, with the voters or something. But anyway, he just. He's been doing the first time that he went out. Of course, you do that. Well, they had the election on a Tuesday, and he was elected on Tuesday, and it followed Tuesday. He's out walking the district, and he's been walking it every Tuesday since. So, I mean, he'll change the day. He probably changes the day once in a while because you get. There'll be another woodstone. And then he's got that little office out there under the shade trees on the big picnic table, which is a most delightful place.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's out
at the park.
Hmm?
At the park?
Well, it's out at the park. You know, they've got that little, those little buildings here, the recreation buildings. And he's got
a little... park, not
Eldorado?
No, he wouldn't.
No, it's
probably up there.
It's
Hartwell.
No, I'm trying to remember where it is. It's not Hartwell, because Hartwell was in this, yeah. This is one. Now, there's another one. That's the other one there. Anyway, it's a kind of a rolling place, and they got some little... trails through there. It's real pretty. I don't remember what the name of the park is.
Well, it's
the
Eldorado Park North and East and
West. No, it isn't in this big complex right. Over here. It's one as I remember, but isn't too big, I don't think. And so you go up in the weather is nice, well, you know, you sit out there and take a coffee and go down and see the table and it's a nice place. You can throw anything out there, you know, at least the trees are dug well, you don't know have to leave. Or the squirrels or something like that. But,
so when you talk about city politics, you always have to think in terms of the influence of the press program.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comments on that? How it's changed or has it changed?
Well, I think that probably the reason it's, the one reason it's, well, the reason it's changed, it definitely has as far as the district thing is concerned. But I've got with them, and of course Clark hates them, you know, and he says that they're terrible and they're crooks and all these kinds of things, which is absolutely stupid. And their ambitions are the same as anybody else that's in business. Probably a little bit more so because they're selling to people. You know, they're the same setup that fashion prices is in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the better business is in the town, the better their business is going to be. So this is what they strike for. Now, as far as getting into these things, and, you know, and they print the letters, and you know, all these people got writing about how they were, you know, they're doing all these non-dead. Now, they didn't have to do that kind of stuff to strike with, because you could never think of it. But, I think that probably one of the things, since they went into the district, that I've seen that they aren't so effective because, now, for instance, on this 950 thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rest of us aren't interested in this thing. I mean, as far as putting in every day, that's the fact that you take the case of a small segment. We're not talking about approximately 1/9. It would be a little bit less. Even in Ridley's district, because I think the circulation percentage-wise is probably not as high out there. But especially when you get into a, which it isn't out there, but if you get into a one-subject type deal, you know, you can't be printing this own thing. I'm going to be sitting down that third district and say, listen, you're wasting half of my second page of the local section with all this stuff, and you're talking about the same thing, with just different people doing it. And then, of course, Clark really got stupid as far as I was concerned about he got into the tirade on him and about what they were doing and everything. And, of course, it's a good thing I didn't own the first telegram, because I never would have mentioned Clark, the city council, or what they would do ever again.
Yeah.
And I still feel pretty badly about that. Now, I saw in the paper the other day that they're talking about Clark the mayor. Jeez, that's got to be a living end. Because he turned out to be, you know, I mean, time since he was dead. And, he must have lived, but anyway. But you never know when the stuff's going to go to their head and they're going to crack up, you know. Sometimes you get as far as the guy with the paintbrush. And time has tendencies that way. But I don't know what he wants to be, king of the mountain, I guess. But he just can't stand. And he can't stand criticism with a damn, which is, you know, if you can't get it there, that's it. See, I mean, so they'll get back at you. But anyway, I would like to see Russ win this thing and get him to do a through the mayor and everything. Of course, the one thing that I objected to, and I still object to all these, you know, they don't face up to the problems. And if they come up and there comes up a sticky problem on the thing, and they appoint a task force, it's going to cost money. They don't pay the task force anything, but there's people in the paper and everything else. Now. And, I think it's a Blue Ribbon Committee. That turned out to be a fine kettle of fish because the city manager's office was running that, and they just dragged things down and dragged things changed. And if you got, I could have told you that they had the thing all lined up to start for just the way it was going to come out to say it.
No, what was the Blue Ribbon
Committee? Well, this was named the appointed to straighten out the whole city.
So the master plan?
No, not a master plan. It was either they were going to do away with the Civil Service Commission and the Commission and had a bunch of math intents or something on it. I don't know. They got this Blue Ribbon Committee is getting real unhappy. God, after the years that I've this used to be one of the greatest organizations in the world from the political point of view.
Yes.
Because they were strictly nonpartisan. And what we did, and Ted Foster and Tiger, we really were the bill and did their campaigns as far as space was concerned. Because what they do was, before the thing, they're out there pounding on getting everybody registered.
Yes.
Then when the campaign came up, they would finish the audience and the places to have these things, and they would run it strictly on a non-partisan basis. I don't see why they didn't take this local one's charter away from them. They're out punching their bells for candidates. They're out doing everything. They're screaming and they're hollering and yelling. And it's really ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Because then when they're legal innovators, and now I see they're getting in there, they're taking sides, they in the June ballot this year, I don't remember, they're screaming about 5 and 6, that's just saving the wealthy. They want to keep the inheritance tax and the gift tax and, you know, take it away from the rich and give it to the poor. What is that, the fifth? I think that's the fifth gift in the minute, in the Communist Manifesto. But as far as I'm concerned, their effectiveness is completely gone. And then, of course, they get out the vote and they, you know, that was the next thing after the. But they never took sides in anything. Now they're starting to bring stuff up. They're just the lobbying. They're with the National Rifle Association. So, I mean, that's about the point, you know.
I have a set of friends who might
not agree
with your argument, but I don't know if they can.
Probably.
But that's
the thing.
If you really feel that they're lobbying, you know, that they're...
Sure, they're lobbying.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it all the time. Now, the first thing that she did, you know her?
Who?
McCain?
No.
Well, she's the first woman that we got on our Civil Service Commission. So she comes down. She's trying to make us a branch of the League of Women Voters. She'd been president a year before or something. Yes. And she was Tom's big gal on the Blue Ribbon Committee. And her job was to try to get through the mayor, you know, third mayor. We're getting a little low.
Anyway,
she came down there. And they met on a Wednesday, and I think they met on Mondays or something. And then she remembers that she brought this thing up, they'd come up with something, and she thought we should okay that they were going to support what they did.
What they did,
the women voted? Yeah, they passed some scary resolution about taking care of the turns out on Pacific Coast Highway or something like that. And we finally got her straightened out on that. And the first motion that she made was she wanted to do away with the Civil Service Commission, the Water Commission, and do the Harbor Commission. Yeah, take them out of their charter and make them political like that. I think this is political. They had nothing to trouble with her, and they still have nothing to trouble with her. And with her attitude that, you know, and she's one of the worst of the women's liberties that I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I knew what I was getting into. I was chairman of the commission when she came in. And I'd never seen her. I never met her. So the day she was He went, okay, I took the lunch from the bread, and get a lunch time. And she'd been on for about 4 or 5 weeks, or 6 weeks, I guess, and we'd gone to Chicago International Convention. And so she went along. And this is just a little aside, and one thing about it. She didn't like anything I said because I didn't